when I was reading the lectionary for today, I had a little giggle about those scripture readings, because they remind me of perhaps my naughtiness at theological college. So what we've heard today, I see as really that new beginning, that being born of Christianity, and because it is in that knowledge and that experience with Jesus resurrected that the disciples went on to create what we now know as Christianity. Because of course Jesus was a Jew, and he was trying to reform Judaism. He really was not trying to start a new religion. He wanted to see his own religion become better and more compassionate in the society that he lived in. So my naughtiness at theological college was that I wrote an essay about how Jesus had failed to create a social movement, much to the intrigue of my lecturer. But really what I was trying to say, and really all of the stories say, that when Jesus died, everybody disappeared. That's the story we know. And so all of his messages and all of the people he had brought together in his time just scattered to the wind, not because what he said and did wasn't important, but because it was so dangerous at that time. And so when we hear the resurrection stories and that experience of the disciples with Jesus, it really is that new beginning of how they interpreted what happened in his life, and how they created a movement that we now know today as Christianity. I did get a high distinction for my essay, by the way, even though it was a bit naughty. Sorry, my computer's just doing strange things. And so one of the other things that I wanted to talk about today is really that in many religions have a beginning and a story around how that happens. And Jesus is, of course, as you know, important to most of the major religions. So certainly for us, but for Islam and for Judaism, Jesus is acknowledged as an important person within the expression of those religions. I'm reflecting this week on being scared about where things are going in the world, particularly if you've been listening to the news that there's a possibility of engagement with Iran, as much as Israel, Palestine, and some of the countries in that region. And just being nervous about how this might play out, not just for us, but not just for the people in that region, but for the people in the world, and how we're expressing what this conflict is actually about. Have you heard the term "hurt people hurt people"? Yeah, it's a phrase, it's a common phrase, certainly in psychological circles, and it refers to the idea that individuals who've been emotionally or physically hurt are more likely to become perpetrators of hurt on others, because they're acting out of that hurt that they've had. And this week, I don't know if you heard it, but Benjamin I always get this wrong. Netanyahu was speaking about the next steps in the planned conflict, and he said, and it was quite stark for me. He said, "Whoever hurts us, we will hurt them." And I was reflecting on that this week around how we talk about what's happening in this conflict. Is it about religion? Is it about culture? Is it about land? Is it about you know, what is it about in terms of why this is happening? And of course, there's a long history, which I won't go into, and you may have looked up yourselves. But it really struck me that it in lots of ways, it comes down to, on both sides, hurt people are hurting people. And I think when we look at it that way, it strikes me that it gives us new possibilities for looking at how to resolve conflict. There's a man who lives in Canada. His name is Gabor Maté. Has anybody heard of him? He's a very world-renowned trauma expert. And he's also a survivor of the Holocaust. He was a baby when his mother had to give him away for his own safety and came back to a stranger and came back a number of months later when to retrieve him. And he recognises that trauma in his life as something that has affected the way he's treated other people. He talks about the word trauma from it's actually from the Greek, and it means wound. And he says, it's not what happens to you, it's what happens inside of you as a result of what happens to you. And so if we think about the fact that the Jewish people in the history of the Holocaust have that wound, that intergenerational wound and identity of being persecuted in that way. But we also think about the Christian Arabs and the Muslim Arabs who have lived in that land area for millennia, and how being displaced in that homeland is a wound as well. And you can see that how that hurt and that wound is acting out in hurting others. Gabor Maté also says, though, it can't be an excuse for everything. He's got a funny story about when he gets upset and he uses that experience of being of the wounding to explain why he might be doing the wrong thing. And his wife eventually said, Gabor, you can't use the excuse of Hitler made me do it anymore. And it's also a nice reflection, I think, that he talks about the way that accountability is part of this story, not just about using the excuse of our wounds. He also has, if you do get the chance to look him up on YouTube or whatever mechanism you've got, he has a remarkable story about moving from Zionism when he was young to understanding the context of the broadening Jewish community in Israel to coming to a place of fiercely defending the Palestinians and the reasons for why he's doing that. I think none of us, well, if you do know the answer to the question of the conflict, please let me know afterwards. But I think we're all struggling with how to enter into that hurt and find some solutions. My experience, of course, I have not been in that area of the world, and but I think I told you the last time I was here about Ambon and the Muslims and the Christians camping out in the mosque and the Muslims camping out in the church, so that when people came to attack the village, they would be struck with their own. It was a very powerful. I remember that story being incredibly powerful in the way that people can manage wounds and hurt in a productive way to protect each other. I had another experience when I went to Sri Lanka when the war was on between the Tamils and the Sinhalese. And I went with the Victorian Council of Churches, and it was a human rights monitoring trip, basically. We met up with the National Christian Council of Sri Lanka because they were like a mediator group in between the Sinhalese and the Tamils. So the Tamils were mostly Christian, the Sinhalese were mostly Hindu, but a mixture in between. And the National Christian Council of Sri Lanka had managed to gain a place where they could talk to both sides in a war that was very destructive and thousands upon thousands of people were being killed. So we met with the council and we had a chance to go and talk to a range of people on when I say sides, it was really sides, both sides, from the Tamil community and the Sinhalese community, but who were trying to work for peace. And there was one young woman I remember very well. She, her name was Vanestra, and I'll read it for you. Just in context, many of the military checkpoints at that time in Sri Lanka, individuals were asked to show their identification cards. I remember going through one of these checkpoints and we had to show our passports. But I also remember that was the first time that, and this sounds dramatic, but a gun was pointed at me. It wasn't intentionally pointed at me, but there were so many guns around that they were just, you could just find yourself with a gun being pointed at you just because it's there, and it was terrifying. So I can't imagine what would it be like if it was intentionally pointed at you. So the checkpoints, and she told this story. It was a muggy day when Vanestra was stopped at a military checkpoint in Colombo, the capital city of Sri Lanka. This day she had forgotten her pass. The soldier demanded to know, "Are you Tamil or Sinhalese?" Vanestra turned her face toward him and answered in English, "I am Sri Lankan." The soldier shook his head and asked again, "Are you Tamil or Sinhalese?" Again, Vanestra answered him, "I am Sri Lankan." A third time, the soldier asked her, "Are you Tamil or Sinhalese?" This time, Vanestra leaned towards the soldier and said, "The president says one nation, one people. I am Sri Lankan." And it was just a beautiful example, I thought, of the way that she was undermining the narrative that we are different and that we are we must fight because of our differences. And when we think about hurt people hurting people, we are still people, we are still humanity. We may have a different faith, we may have a different cultural belief, but we are one as humanity. One of the other things that struck me about this that I really like in this concept is the story about Jesus saying, "Turn the other cheek." Do you remember that one? I think it's in Matthew. And has anyone explained the cultural meaning of that in terms of what it meant in that first century context? Have you heard that before? Not really. Yeah, so for us, it's in our culture, it's often been interpreted as, don't fight back, like just take it. You know, if someone's going to do something to you, they can do more to you if you like. But in actual fact, within the context of first century Mediterranean world, it means the complete opposite. So, and this is because there were so many different ways of expressing themselves. A collectivist culture, not an individualist culture. And so many things that they would interact in the way that they would interact with each other that we just wouldn't understand. It's very similar to going to, I guess, another culture where you just, it takes a while to understand what's going on because they've got their own ways of communicating. And so in that reading, sorry, I'm having trouble speaking today. forgive me, must have been the journey in. So in that culture, Jesus doesn't generally talk about turning your cheek, but specifically focuses on turning from the right one to the left one. Because at that time, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, that's what he says. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other one also. But it highlights that Roman soldiers would slap Jewish citizens on the right cheek using the back of their hand. That type of slap was reserved for people who were inferior. However, if you turned your face to provide the other cheek, the person would be forced to backhandedly slap you on the left cheek. And that indicates that the person or the recipient is an equal, not inferior. So what Jesus is actually saying to us is when someone disrespects you or the people around you, stand your ground and maintain your equality in the face of that persecution. Which really, in lots of ways, comes back to that concept of hurt people hurting people, because there is equality in the fact that both the Palestinians and the Jews have been hurt, wounded in different ways. And certainly in Sri Lanka, it was the same. And in Ambon, I saw the same. Rarely is it, unless it's a dictatorship, we could talk about Ukraine in a different way. There is an equality in the pain. And our challenge is to name that and to say, not to say what are you doing, but to say, why are you doing this? What happened to you that makes you feel you need to act in this way? And we can start to begin to break down some of the conflict, not just in our own lives, but hopefully on a broader level. Because we don't know what God wants. It is very strange to have this kind of conflict in the Middle East with three major religions all saying we all naming God, Yahweh, God for us, Allah. And yet this conflict continues. And what does God want out of this? We don't know. But we are called to ask those questions. What happened to you? Why is this happening? And how can we deal with those wounds? And hopefully with that attitude and that respect, and what we're taught through that is that we can learn to live together with differing traditions, differing beliefs, and different experiences that bind us and not divides us. Thanks be to God.